Hey, it's Benji Cole, son of Al Cole from CBS Radio and host of People of Distinction, the talk that gives an in-depth view of some of the most dynamic, intelligent, and successful people on the planet. Run to our website, peopleofdistinction.org, for more info, or you can always email me directly at benji@alcoleenterprises.com. And on the line with us today, we have Maja Rhee Devine. We're going to be discussing her amazing novel, The Voices of Heaven. Available for purchase through Amazon as well as BarnesandNoble.com. But people, if you want to gather everything that Maja has in store, well, do yourself a favor and head directly to her personal site. And that's MajaRhee Devine.com. There you'll find more information on Maja herself, more information on this fantastic novel, as well as find the hyperlink set up to take it to the purchasing pages. So one more time, that's MajaRhee Devine.com. And I do want to quickly take this opportunity to point out that she was brought to our network by one of the best advertising firms in the business. And of course, you already know I'm talking about Author Reputation Press. So listen to me. If you're a writer out there and you have a work of art that you've created, although you need help moving it because you find yourself at a crossroads, well, give yourself the best gift you could possibly give and contact ARP. You heard it here first. They're one of the best in the business to do it. And this is what they specialize in. So head on over to AuthorReputationPress.com today and gather all of the ways that they're going to assist in maximizing your creative endeavors. And listen, it is a true pleasure to have Maja here on the line. This is something you're going to want to add to your shelf, but at the end of the day, well, don't take my word for it. Take hers. Maja, first and foremost, welcome to People of Distinction, and thank you very much for being a guest today. How are you doing?
Just fine. You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me. And by the way, my book that you just mentioned and publicized wonderfully won 4 book awards, including the Independent Publishers Award and AARP, American Association of Women Professors Association. They have an award giving out. It's called Thorpe Men Award, and I won that. This book won that. In addition, 2 other book awards it received.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, there you have it. Listen, I mean, people, we could stop there, right? I mean, if it's winning awards, you know that this book is churning some heads. And as I mentioned before, you're going to want to get your hands on it. So, Maja, thank you very much for being with us. Thank you for telling us that. And before we go into the book, I want to learn a little bit more about yourself, please. So let's start there. Tell us more about your background.
I was born in Korea. And as I mentioned, my birth mother gave me away because I was born with a twin brother. At that time, boy preference was still very strong. In a way, it still runs pretty strong. Actually, in 1992 alone, female fetuses were 20,000 female fetuses were aborted based on the gender, their sex. Of course, that trend of aborting female fetuses has decreased dramatically in Korea compared to China and India, where such practice is still continuing a lot stronger than in Korea. Korea, because of influences from Christianity and many, many Koreans studying abroad and coming in contact with Western values where men and women's rights and boy and girls' rights are valued a little more strictly than in Korea.
Thank you very much for that, Maja. Now, I know that this is already starting to go into the book, so without further ado, let's jump right in. The Voices of Heaven. Tell us a little bit more about your novel.
So, the novel, the first page begins with the mistress, my father's mistress coming that day to become his mistress and bear him a boy child. And I was 5 years old. I'm sitting on the ledge, hallway ledge, and watching my mom. My mom is in the kitchen chopping carrots and fried eggs and green onion to make a feast to welcome the new woman, the mistress, coming to sleep with her husband. and produce a boy child. And my mother is praying. I know she was praying. She was praying, please bear my husband healthy boys. And she was wiping her eyes. She was crying. Oh, she had to share her husband with a woman coming. And so, neighbor woman came in, jumped in, and she said, oh, you, Major, if you had been a boy, this would not have happened. Your mom would not be crying and preparing a feast for a mistress coming to bear your family a child. So I began to cry right along with my mom. So that's the beginning pages of this book. And I follow the couple, my father and the two wives, how they fare in their relationships. And I take them through the Korean War, when they were all separated and they were just dying every day, roaming marketplaces with photos of their husband, the other wife, and et cetera, to find each other. And so we go through that. You may wonder how I began to write about it, how I became a writer. Well, I had no intention to become a writer. Actually, because I was an only child and my adopted mother's hope in life was for me to become a lawyer and become a woman judge, the first woman judge of Korea. Money and make her very famous and make her very proud of me. And so my goal in life at that time, as I was growing up, the teenage years and college years, I went to Seogang University, was for me to become a lawyer. My goal was to become a lawyer and first woman judge, or next to that, the next best thing to that would have been becoming the General Assembly member, Congress, member of the Congress. So that was my goal. Writing a novel was far from my thoughts. But after I accidentally ran into an American from a cornfield of Joliet, Illinois, he was a Peace Corps volunteer in Korea. And I met him, and we soon got married. And I began to tell him about this, my family story. And he said, you got to write a book. You got to write a book. I said, you know, I'm a Korean woman, very small and, petite, and looking very submissive, typically Asian submissive wife, being a very nice submissive wife. When my husband suggested that I write a book, I said, are you kidding me? I said, no way. No way would I do such a dumb thing, because I lived through that painful period of my life. Everybody telling me that my mother might be dying because I was not born a boy. I lived through that every single day. And why would I want to write a book about it and have to go through, live through it again, moment by moment, and feel the pain and shed tears in order to write the book? No way would I write. So I disobeyed my husband, American husband, corn-fed Chicago, diehard Chicago Cubs fan. I told him, no way, I would not write it. So I disobeyed my husband for 25 years until we had 5 children of our own. And the young ones began to go to grammar school. I was innocently lured into writing by a woman writer. She said, let's go do writing together. We will room together. And writing did not appeal to me, but rooming with her in a dormitory in Sheridan College appealed to me. So I went, just to be able to pal around with her. And the writing teacher from New York, her name is Vicki Lindner. And she, the first writing assignment she gave was, you go back as far back in your memory of early life and go outside and write 2 pages about the first day you remember the most and come back Mm-hmm. And we all came back with two pages, and we all were told to read what we wrote. And what I wrote was the day my mother was crying in the kitchen, and the mistress was coming to become my father's mistress. And I wrote about that at the beginning pages of my book. And I wrote that because of that writing teacher, Vicki Lindner, told me to. And when I brought it to the class, and we were all told to read our own writing, when I read mine, my classmates began to cry. They began to cry. And then afterwards, my teacher told me, come see me in her office. So I went. She said, your writing poured cold air down my spine. The cold chill went down my spine when I read your two pages. She said, you must write this book. And you must take 1 year off from counseling. In the graduate studies I was doing to become a counselor at that time, she said, take a break for 1 year and write this book. If it doesn't work for you, if you don't like it, you can always go back to counseling. Counseling will wait for you. But this book cannot wait. Oh, my goodness. So after resisting my husband's suggestion to write the book for 25 years, I began to write. And Vicki was right. I began to really, really get into writing. It gave me chances to cry, shed more tears that I should have shed 20-some years ago, but I didn't. It was blocked up in my body, all the sorrows of not being a boy, all the accusations by neighbors and relatives that my mother was, she might die. Actually, the night the mistress came, my father and mother were really totally in love with each other, like Romeo and Juliet. And my father could not bear to go into another room and sleep with another woman. And so he said the craziest thing anybody would have thought of. He said, let's all three of us sleep together. What? Oh, my mother just about just fell down and just passed out at that very, very stunning, weird, strange suggestion. And my grandmother was coming after my father with her pipe in her hand to hit him over the head with her brass pipe for having said such a stupid thing. But my father fought her off and picked up my mother and took her to her bedroom and picked up the second woman, put her down in the same. So all three of them were sleeping in the same room, all with their clothes on. Maybe some of the audience members might think, there's something kinky going on. One man with two women, but they weren't being kinky. They had their clothes on. My father just could not go to another room with another woman. He simply wanted to avoid having to have that trauma of having to do it with the second woman, with his wife, love of his life, crying in another room. So while the three of them were lying in the dark, my mother passed out. The trauma of the day was too much. My mother passed out, and this is when I thought she was going to die. And neighbor women came with Chinese medicine and held up my mother to sit up, and they spoon-fed the black Chinese medicine into her mouth, and everybody said, this happened because, Major, you couldn't you have been born with a penis like a good boy, but you had to be born as a girl? Oh, I heard this every single day. So then when I began to write, as Vicki recommended, I was living through all these moments all over again. And these emotions of sorrow, deep sorrow, and my strong desire for my father and mother to be in love with each other again and be happy all through this life and through next life, I was sucked into writing. I had to write. No matter how much it hurt, I had to write. And it was kind of a poor person's psychology, counseling. I didn't pay any counselor or psychologist, but writing about these moments gave me plenty of chances to cry my eyes out, which was a therapy. It was a self-therapy. If anybody has sorrows in their heart that would not go away, I recommend writing as a self-therapy. Mm-hmm. And some people take art lessons, but in my case, writing provided the therapy I needed. I am alive and producing, productive writer, writing poems about comfort women of World War II and being interviewed. Actually, I was interviewed last week and the week before, and I have poems about women, comfort women I read on Armando F. Sanchez's interview, and they're on YouTube, both in Korean and English. The YouTube links are two different. One is for Korean version and one English version. And he continues to be interested in my poems about comfort women. This is an extremely important topic. My book, This Voices of Heaven, is an important topic as well because it's about gender issue, the equality, women and men's gender equality, which is in Korean contemporary people would say, oh, we are now very advanced country technologically and economically. We're number 10 and 11th in the world. We don't have these gender issues. We don't kill baby fetuses anymore. We are all equal, men and women. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Right.
You check the economy, the magazine, economic, and it will show you a chart that show the glass ceiling index of all the different countries and compare the glass ceiling index of women making their way up from the bottom to executive positions and CEO positions. It shows you the graphs and charts in Economics magazine will show you that Korea and Japan are at the very bottom of the glass ceiling index that shows women moving up in their corporate ladders to CEO and top executive positions. China and, Korea and Japan are at the bottom. So even though contemporary Koreans want to say, hey, we are as advanced in men and women gender equality issues as United States and European countries and Canada. But no. The researchers doing studies on this show, Korea is lagging behind. The inequity between male and female paychecks for performing similar, same tasks on the job will show you how well Korea is advanced or not yet advanced in terms of gender equality. Are they getting men and women getting equal pay for performing the same job? Not yet. So in the same way, some preference culture, you know, the female fetuses being aborted in 1990s alone, in 1992 alone, 220,000. That does not happen as much. And in fact, Korea is the first country among these countries that had aborted female fetuses, like China and India. Korea is the first country that reversed that trend. They do not. They reduce the number of female fetus abortions. And so now the boy and girl sex ratio at birth, ideally it should be 100 girls for 100 girls to 100 girls, maybe 104 boys. but it used to be 118 boys to 100 girls, many more boys. But now the sex ratio went down to more or less normal, that world countries in all the world try to establish in order to have male and female population balance healthy for their societies. And that healthy sex ratio between boy girls and girl babies being born is 100 girls over 204 boys. For some reason, boys' longevity rate is not as good as girls. So to keep a healthy balance of male and female population, you need to start with a few more boys than girls. And so like countries like Canada, I think they have the desirable 100 girls to 104 boy ratio. And Korea has now caught up to almost the same level, but it's still like 100 girls to 105 boys. There's slightly more boys than girls than countries like Canada. So I really digressed into this area. But this is what pulled me into writing further and further and further as I was writing about my own case story of growing up in Korea and suffering this type of abuses by grown-ups saying, oh, you should have been a boy. Then your mother would have been happy. That kind of writing material just captured me, and I couldn't get out of it. And so I was happy that I wrote this book, and I now act like to my husband, who encouraged me to write it, and I said, no, get away from me. But now I act like I created writing itself. I brag about my book, having written this book, and now moving on to poetry writing, and I write about the most oppressed, abused women of the world, the comfort women of World War II, the 11 to 19-year-old girls, pre-menstrual age girls. Japanese side like to say, oh, they were older girls who were already in prostitution business. But some statistics researchers show these 200,000 Koreans who were roped into Japanese military sexual slavery, they were the ages, about 70 to 80%. Of those girls were between the ages of 11 and 19. Many of them were even pre-menstrual ages. So my heart just breaks into 1,000 pieces, just as my heart broke over my father and mother's happiness being broken because of the mistress coming into the house. So I continue to write poems about comfort women. We need to remember their suffering. Why did they suffer? Oh, in fact, I might mention this one poem. This poem is about 3,000 palace maidens in the year 660. They, as a mass of 3,000 palace maidens, they jumped off a cliff called Fallen Flower Cliff, Fallen Flower Rock Cliff. They jumped off from there and threw themselves into a river named White Stallion River. Why? Wow. Because Chinese Tang soldiers and Korean Chilla soldiers were coming into their country to make their country cause their country to disappear from the face of the earth. And so before, and they knew these 3,000 palace maidens knew. And once these Tang soldiers and Silla soldiers came into the palace, they would all be raped. So in order to keep their virginity, in Korea, they had what is called virginity mania. And in order to keep the virginity, a woman, any woman, all women were expected to do anything they can to stop being raped, even if they had to kill themselves. And this is what happened to 3,000 palace maidens. They threw themselves into the river.
You know, people, I'm telling you, could we have selected the more perfect embodiment of a person of distinction to be on our network? I mean, my goodness, just listen to what she's saying. And here's the best part. We've barely scratched the surface. There is still so much left for you to uncover. And you already know, I mentioned it before, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, MajaReeDivine.com are the places you have to go. You got to pick up your copies and just get lost in it, because this is something that is so special. Now, that's not all, okay? Of course, the anchor for today's interview was the Voices of Heaven. But Meja has written another book. It's a poetry book, and it's called Long Walks on Short Days. Now, we don't have time to go into it for this particular interview, but know that there's more on the horizon. You got to get both books and get lost in them. And as we close out here, Meja, we've discussed so much information here today. Is there anything else that you haven't yet articulated that you really want to make sure our listening audience is aware of?
Yes, this book, The Voices of Heaven, is full of Korean proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
This adds flavor to the book, literary flavor. The proverbs show everybody's daily dialogue, what thoughts go through their minds, and they express their thoughts through proverbs. For example, when they see somebody stupid, they say, "Oh, that person is so stupid. He can't even tell red beans from black beans." That's how stupid somebody is. So these proverbs are uniquely Korean proverbs, and they add color and voices, Korean voices, to the words that you will read in my book, The Voices of Heaven. And also, you may be able to distinguish Korean characteristics and Korean culture and history from that of China and Korea. Often readers confuse the cultures of China, Korea, and Japan, and they think they're all kind of similar, one thing all lumped together. But there are distinctive characteristics between them, and especially distinctively Korean characters. Oh, for one, Korea has its own language. Koreans don't use Chinese. Yes, they do use Chinese written characters, but their spoken language is their own. And Japan has their own language, written language, but Koreans speak their own Korean language. And it is linguistic scholars say Korean language is uniquely the language that Korean language is most closest is not Chinese, not Japanese, it's Hungarian. Can you believe that? Hungarian. The language, Korean language, came from that region, Middle Eastern, Hungary and Turkey, that area. The racially Korean race traveled across Sahara Desert and everything from Hungary and Turkey area, not like Chinese or Japanese. So ethnically, we're totally distinct. We may look alike. Sometimes I can't even tell me apart from Chinese or Japanese, and I don't blame Americans or other people from other countries being confused between whether I look like Chinese or Korean or Japanese. I can't even tell 100%. So I don't blame other people getting confused. But culturally, racially, and historically, Koreans are absolutely distinct from Chinese and Japanese. And in my book, in so many ways, I showcase how Koreans are different, how we are uniquely Korean. We're not semi-Japanese. We're not semi-Chinese either. We are Korean. And that I want to say. So in this book, you will get Korean culture and people, their voices, their words, not Chinese or Japanese. And another thing I want to say about this book is, yes, Koreans over 3,000 year history, every 10 years, either China invaded Korea or Japan invaded Korea. And both countries wanted to take over China. In fact, Japan took over Korea for 35 years from 1910 to 1945. But we are still distinctly different from Japan. And it would have been 3,000 year history of Korea. It would have been so easy for Koreans and Korean kings and Korean subjects to say, okay, when Chinese wanted to invade and occupy Korea, it would have been so much easier to say, okay, Chinese masters, please take over us and take care of us. They would not have had to fight, form military. They would not have to spend money to build castles to protect themselves against invasions from China. It would have been so much easier to just roll over and say, oh, big brother China, please take care of us. We'll be just part of your country. Did they do that? No. They would have rather died building castles. They would have rather died starved to death, putting money into defense mechanisms. That's what they did. And same way with Japan. When Japan invaded Korea, they should have just rolled over and said, okay, we'll be part of Japan. What the heck? No, they didn't do that. They wanted to keep their own identity. They have their own history. They have their own culture. They have their own ways of cooking things. They wanted to keep their own national identity. And that's why here's China and Korea and Japan. Korea distinctly different from China and Japan. I am not saying, I am saying we all need to get along together. We are all brothers and sisters as world community members. I'm not championing separatist kind of philosophy. I am not. But I am proud of the fact that Koreans fought tooth and nail, spent blood to keep their identity through 3,000 years to preserve their own culture and their own historical treasures, memories. I am very proud. I'm sure Chinese are very proud of their history, their distinctive identity, distinctively different from Korea and Japan. And I'm sure Japan feels the same way, very super proud of their wonderful world-class accomplishments, et cetera, et cetera. But hey, let's get real here. We, China, Korea, and Japan, are distinctly three different countries with three different ethnic, historical, cultural backgrounds and roots. I believe every 10 years, China, Japan, or some other forces, Russia, invaded Korea every 10 years. That's how much Korea had to fight against in order to keep their identity. And I hope my book gives the readers the sense of what went into Koreans to make them Koreans. not Chinese and not Japanese, not Russian. And they will find in this book how they are different. And in the smells they smell, kimchi smell, sesame seed smell, etc. And in the language, why is Korean language the closest to Hungarian, not Chinese and not Japanese? Why? Why? Because Koreans kept their identity. And there are many, many, let's see, historical diggings that brought up artifacts in the areas where in the areas in China where Koreans lived. And by looking at these archaeological products that Koreans left behind while they were living there, they can immediately say, oh, these are Korean, or these are Korean pottery, or these are Korean brass work. They can immediately identify Koreans. No matter how much Chinese tried to absorb Korea throughout thousands of their history. So in this book, I hope the readers will understand it took blood and guts for Koreans to preserve who they are, their identity. They were not given it on a silver platter by anybody. Koreans, their blood and guts went into establishing what they recognize as their own motherland. I hope readers would get full taste of their struggle and full taste of the beauty of their language, beauty of their food, the beauty of the words they speak to each other through proverbs. I have added over 100 proverbs. That's how they express their emotions. They are different from proverbs Japanese use. They are different from Chinese proverbs. These are uniquely Korean proverbs. Those proverbs add linguistic flavor that's uniquely Korean. When I won one of the many awards with this book, American Association of Women Professors group gave me Thorpe Men Award. And in that award, the judging committee's comments included this about the language used in the book through proverbs, the metaphors, the images, the smells, and the taste the readers can taste by reading the words, reading the proverbs. Like when you wake up in the morning, magpies sing. They sing. Then Koreans say, oh, good news coming today. That's how they automatically react to magpies singing in the morning. That's one of the proverbs. And when somebody is stupid, as I mentioned earlier, oh, that kid is as stupid as not being able to tell red beans from black beans. Hey, that's pretty stupid. You know, this is how Koreans express their emotions through words they speak to each other every day and through the proverbs that use. You know, I knew as a five-year-old, because my grandma told me that if there were no ants lining up outside our gate from the alleyway trying to get inside, that means the next day it will be a sunny day. How did I know? Because my grandma spoke in proverbs. And so I have this a whole lifetime collection of wisdom that came from proverbs Koreans spoke to each other every day.
People, you know, if this hasn't moved you, you need to pinch yourself, okay? Because you're clearly asleep. You have to head on over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, MajaRedivine.com. Get lost in it. While you're at it, pick up her poetry book, Long Walks on Short Days. and you will be sure to want to get this book for someone else as well, because both of these creations are absolute gifts. Head on over there today. Pick up your copies. You can thank me later. Meja, this has been an absolute pleasure, a wonderful delight. Thank you once again for being a guest on People of Distinction.
Thank you so much. This has been a very special program.